Next Step 688, August 12th, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
The Lorax. The Lorax turns 50 years old this year. You know the Lorax, right? Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel, right? Dr. Seuss, oh, come on. If you've raised children, you know Dr. Seuss is. If, here's something even better. If you were a child at one time, you probably know who Dr. Seuss is. Cat in the Hat, Green Eggs and Ham. The Lorax, it was kind of an interesting book because it was basically about the environment, and the Lorax spoke on behalf of the trees. Well, it's been 50 years since the Lorax first saw print, and it was kind of interesting because Dr. Seuss, of course, for children, letting children know that there are consequences to what we do with the environment. And lo and behold, this week we got a very strong message from the United Nations, the IPCC. That's an abbreviation for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. Anyway, they call it Code Red for Human-Driven Global Heating. And it comes as a warning. I mean, one of the most stern warnings that can possibly come is coming from the United Nations and this commission. And, you know, this is like getting to me. By the way, today we're going to be talking a lot about all these kind of different things, these warnings that come to us. It's just interesting that what does it take for us to wake up? What does it take? I got this posed to me just a couple nights ago. A doctor who actually a physician of mine in the past, and we were talking about the COVID. What does it take? What does it take? I mean, this doctor points to all of the different evidences, and beyond the evidences, it's the human interest, right? Pointing to people who have lost parents. And I'm doing the same. I'm pointing to people since the beginning of this year, since the beginning of 2021, the number and volume of funerals that I have done as a priest, it never before have I seen this many. And here's what's interesting to me. Oh, are they Armenian? Can you believe that? People ask me, oh, are they Armenian? Well, no, duh, what am I? I'm an Armenian priest. Well, of course they're Armenian. I'm serving an Armenian community. But underlying that, are they Armenian, question is, you mean Armenians get the coronavirus? We're seeing unprecedented numbers of deaths in our communities. And I'm one priest of many here in the Los Angeles area who have to officiate at these funerals. What does it take for us to wake up? And now the IPCC, the UN, is giving a strict warning that, hey, take care of this planet. Right now, it does not look good. It does not look good. Global warming. And what does it take? Well, we're seeing here in the United States, all talk, and I know it's happening everywhere else, right? We're seeing towns get flooded. We're seeing drought. In our Northwest, which is the most beautiful, lush, green areas, Oregon, Washington, they're seeing unprecedented heat waves. They're seeing fire, destruction. What we're seeing here in Southern California, Southwest, in Arizona, Southwest California, I mean, where we're living, in these heat waves. What does it take for us to wake up? I mean, we hear about COVID and everything, and there's still people that are sitting around and saying, well, you know, I don't want to take the vaccine. I don't want to wear a mask because it infringes on my freedom. Well, guess what, folks? Most of life infringes on your freedom. I've heard people say that, you know, like, the government can't tell me this. What are you talking about? The government can do whatever they want. The government tells you you have to stop at a red light, right? You can't go through it. If you do, there's consequences, right? There are laws. There are rules. The government tells you. Yes, this is a really wild one here in the United States. And I apologize. Most of today's show will pertain to the rest of the world, too, because we're going to be talking about some big issues. And Pope Francis weighs in, too, today. So it's going to be a different kind of show. I know you're going to enjoy it. So bear with us for a few minutes as I talk a little bit about the United States, because there's so many people that are concerned about personal freedoms and personal rights. And, you know, the government. What's the government doing? My younger sister, works at a clinic. She's wonderful. She heard somebody complaining that the government's putting a chip inside of the vaccine. So she took a magnet and ran it up and down her arm and did so on everybody who was vaccinated, and she showed everybody the hesitant people. Like, look, there is nothing. The magnet's not sticking to anything. There is no microchip in you. But we're really, really scared because, why? Because people have put this doubt in our minds. Do you see where I'm getting? Now you wonder, why on a religious show are you talking about this? Well, doubt is a very, very big and powerful player in all this. And there is another part to this too, that God gives us this planet and says, take care of it. Tend to it, and look what we're doing to it. That's a big, that's the ultimate religious connection, that the planet is sacred. And you know, whether you want to go through the Judeo-Christian tradition of creation, whether you want to look at it from a different angle, no matter what, you still come back to Mother Earth. You still come back to this the sacredness of the land, of the earth, and what are we doing to it? The pollutants that we're putting in. What was the Lorax talking about? Yeah. For children, 50 years ago. And right now, it's like, come out. So anyway, I was saying that people are like questioning, like, oh, the government, what's the government? The government can't be doing it. Yeah, the government does a lot of things. Now, here's a really sobering reality. When I was born, and those people who are in my age range remember that there were some very, very nasty diseases. One of them was polio. One of them was smallpox. There was diphtheria, whooping cough. You don't hear much about them. Sometimes you hear flare-ups, people, they start showing up. But for the most part, they've been eradicated. And why? Because of vaccines. And not only because of vaccines, but they have been mandated. In fact, if you have a child here in the United States, you cannot enroll your child into school without that child first getting those vaccinations against, I forgot, there's three of them. I know smallpox is in there, polio's in there. I don't know if it was diphtheria or what. Anyway, what the point is that the government mandates that, you know, to put your child into school where he or she can endanger the lives of others, this child needs to be vaccinated. And so now we're up against coronavirus, this horrible virus, and we're showing that vaccinations do help. Do help. Yeah, it doesn't mean you're immune to, it doesn't mean you can't get the coronavirus. But when you do get it, doesn't mean that you're going to end up dying, like we saw last year. So what does it take? What does it take for us to wake up, for us to see it? Do you need the doctors to tell you that the ER rooms, the emergency rooms, are packed? That urgent care is packed, that there's no room inside the hospitals? Do you need a priest to tell you that he has seen an overwhelming number of funerals in the past several months, and it's continuing? Do you need the grave digger, the mortician? Do you need the cemetery keeper to tell you that there's no more room, we can't put more bodies in it? Well, we're seeing all of these. And these kind of challenges are hitting us daily. They're causes for anxiety. They're causes for us to wonder, but also as a Christian, they're a cause for us to react and say, what is my obligation? What is my duty? If this, the sacredness of the earth is to be revered, if this earth is sacred, if God has created this, what is my responsibility to take care of that earth? I mean, the United Nations comes out with this statement, calling it Code Red. And in fact, I'll put a link on today's show notes. Read through it. It's very sobering, saying that if we don't do anything in the next 25 years, we're going to be up for some very nasty things happening. If we do something right now, it looks like in 25 years, we can still keep it at where we are right now. But to do something that can change the way things happen, that in the long run, that requires us to be talking about it, and more importantly, doing something about it. But what do you do? Here's the question, and it's a question that turned up yesterday, of all places, at my deacon's retreat. Yesterday I went and I taught, so we organized a deacon's retreat up in the Sequoias. Our diocese has a camp up there. So we called for a deacon's retreat up in the Sequoias. And one of our priests, Father Gomedas, is running it this week. He's the retreat master. And I was one of the speakers. So I went up yesterday for the day. It's about a four-hour ride one way. And drove up there. And it took me about 6 hours back. that's called Southern California traffic. But it also gives you a chance to think about, well, the same issues that we're talking about. You've got the roads, and you've got people, and you've got more people on it. And how do you move people from one place to the other? So I go to this retreat, and I'm teaching up there. And we're teaching the new generation of deacons. Most of them were young men. And we say, well, idealistically, this is what you need to do. In fact, I came in on the tail end of a very dear friend of mine, Father Mamigon. He was doing a lecture and teaching the young deacons on service. And one of the guys asked the question, well, what about the old guard that's up there? And this is a very important question. In fact, I mention it because it comes up in the church, but it comes up in the world as well. What about the old guard? So I'm a deacon, and I'm going to learn the proper way, the right way to do the liturgy. And so I'm being taught by the master, and I learn this. But I'm the young guy. I'm the young guy on the totem pole. So I go up to the altar on Sunday morning, and I'm surrounded by all these old guys, right? These old guys that, this is the way you do it. Don't rock the boat, buddy. What am I supposed to do? It was a very legitimate question. Very, very legitimate. In fact, it was very so important because it pertains to all of us too. Okay, we know what's right. We know that this planet cannot sustain life at the rate we're going. But how do you convince others? What is the means by which you do it so that others can benefit as well? But more importantly, give you the room to do what you want to do. And it's true whether you're talking about the planet or you're talking about celebrating the divine liturgy. It's the same thing, right? You've always got the old guard who is protecting the status quo. That's the job of the old guard. And now here's something that's really important to remember. It's something that I've had to think about throughout my lifetime over and over and over again. The old guard protects the status quo. If you want change, you've got to change what? The status quo. You cannot protect it. But as you get older, you know, your liberal ideas go one way as you see more conservative means, because as you're living, you see life and how life comes to you. It's very important as you're growing older not to forget the dreams of your youth. And more importantly, to not forget the energy of your youth. That as a young person, you had ideas of change. Don't become the old guard that protects the status quo for the sake of the status quo. Don't rock the boat, in other words, right? Now go ahead and rock it. Go ahead and rock it. Because as a young person, that's what you were doing. You were rocking it. And so this question comes out, what do we do? Sunday morning, I get to church, and I have now gone to a deacon's retreat. I have learned from the master. I know what I'm supposed to do. And then I'm up against the old guard. And the old guard's looking at my face and saying, don't you dare come in with your wild ideas. This is how we have always done it. And this is how we will always do it. How do you change? And it was interesting because the answer that these young people got was, don't worry about changing the old guard, but just do the right thing and teach the new guard. Teach the ones that come after you. And it was interesting because I thought maybe that was too simplistic of an answer. And then today, this is yesterday, this morning I wake up and I'm reading through just different news items, and I come across Dr. Seuss. The Lorax. And isn't that what Dr. Seuss did? He said, forget about the old guard. Let me teach the new guard. Let me teach the young ones. Let me teach the children, the ones who can make a difference. And I was inspired. This is like 50 years ago, The Lorax. It chronicles the plight of the environment and the Lorax. That's what the book's about. He's the title character, the Lorax, and he speaks for the trees. I'll put a little something on the show notes just so you can get a background on it. But just interesting to me that this book comes up today. 50 years ago, Dr. Seuss realized that he needed to change the world if we're going to be living in it. Now, of course, you know, you got to remember that back then, 50 years ago, there was a movement called the ecology movement. You don't hear much about it anymore. You don't actually hear the word ecology, the study of the ecosystem, of the environment. You don't hear about it too much. But back then, 1969 was the first year that they had Arbor Day. And I got involved in Arbor Day. My wife, Susan, chaired the San Jose Beautiful Committee for several years, in fact, planting trees, and to her credit, she actually brought in trees that were indigenous to Armenia and planted them in San Jose in the Silicon Valley. And several of those trees are there. There's markings that are there by the Armenian community. And San Jose Beautiful, she was in charge of the entire city, San Jose, under, what was his name, Tom McHenry was the mayor at the time. And it got me involved because as I'm watching what she's doing, I'm realizing that, yes, the environment, the ecosystem, we talk all about it. We talk about ecology, but you need to do something about it. You need to plant. You need to keep it green. You need to keep it beautiful. And it was interesting because back then, 1980s, this is an area, the Santa Clara Valley, which now is referred to as the Silicon Valley, was in the process of changing. It used to be just apricot orchards and just beautiful, beautiful green area. If you go maybe to the 1930s, 1940s, if you read Steve Jobs's biography, you get a small picture of what Silicon Valley was like before computers. And we were fortunate enough to be there in the early 80s and witness the transformation of the community. So what was important for people like McHenry and like I said, Susan was involved in bringing this to fruition and to the attention of the world through the San Jose Beautiful platform. What was very important was that that space, the sacredness of the earth, was going to be lost because of planning, but it wasn't going to be compromised, that the sacredness need to be retained. And, you know, it's a matter of time. It's a matter of how time and history goes back and interprets it. And part of that is up to us to refer to it. It's up to us to revisit these moments in history. And so The Lorax, Dr. Seuss's book, it comes out. It comes out 50 years ago, teaching the children that they have to take care of their environment. I'm going to take a break right now, okay? We always do. We play a song of the day. When we come back, we're going to tie this all in. We're going to connect the dots with everything we talked about with something that came out of the Vatican, of all places, Pope Francis. Right now, I'm going to go to Haiti. I'm going to play for you a Haitian voodoo song. How's that? Yeah, and I'll come back and explain it to you. Right now, just kind of like enjoy this one. It's called Ogu. And it's off of an album by Lacou Musique. It's called Leave the Bones. Yeah. Leave the Bones. You know why that intrigued me, right? I mean, I wish we could do that too. Leave the Bones. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Enjoy. Just came out on an album called Leave the Bones. And I will have definitely a link on our show notes. More importantly, I'm going to put you in touch with some information about it. You'll love to listen to it. Because it happens to be a prayer to a voodoo spirit of iron and war. And essentially what you heard him saying over here, from what I understand from the translation, is that to the Spirit, you lead us here, you've led us here, and now you're going to take care of us. You have led us here, and now you're going to take care of us. Yeah, Haitian. I think it's beautiful. What it was inviting for me was the name of the album, Leave the Bones. Leave the Bones! The Spirit is living, right? That's how I took it. I'd be interested to hear how you took it. I'll have links on the show notes. I hope you enjoyed that song. Listen to the rest of it. And as I always say, support the musicians. They make our lives so beautiful, don't they? Let's go back to our show.
As I did walk by Hampstead Fair, I came upon Mother Goose. So I turned her loose as she was screaming. And a foreign student said to me, was it really true? There are elephants and lions too in Piccadilly Circus.
Well, we are talking about all kinds of things that pertain to this most sacred home that we have been entrusted with, namely the earth. It's so beautiful, and yet we're seeing all around us the disease, the filth, the poverty of spirit that we're seeing that brings about. What do I mean by that? Think about the opportunities that we have to work with our environment, and instead, because of the poverty of our spirit, in other words, all I care about is myself. It doesn't matter what I destroy along the way, I will walk in that direction. That's poverty of spirit, right? And you can add on to that. That poverty of spirit is also the one that causes us to say that doesn't matter what's the right thing. What matters is that can we maintain, yes, in many cases, what we're talking about is the status quo. Most people who maintain the status quo deep down know that there's something wrong, know that inherently there's something wrong in the system, but there's a comfort level in maintaining that status quo, isn't there, right? And it takes some brave people to push that comfort level. One of which is on this planet Earth right now is Pope Francis. Yeah, I know, we are not a Roman Catholic Church. Just take a chill pill. Take a chill pill. He is the head of the Roman Catholic Church. And like it or not, he's in charge of over 1 billion people on Earth, 1/8 of the Earth's population. That's a pretty big deal. And for me, he's also the Bishop of Rome, much as we have a Catholicos, the Bishop of Armenia, much as Bartholomew, we have him in Constantinople, the same way we have Pope Francis, who's in Rome. And forget about all these statuses and all of these different kind of titles that we vest people with. What's important is he is saying something that needs our attention, that requires us to listen and listen in carefully. There is a video that just came out, and I have to tell you, I was very moved for several reasons when it came out. One of which is because I thought it was just so fantastic. Everything that was said in this video by the Pope. But more intriguing for me was that it wasn't anything new. It was something that we have been saying through the In His Shoes ministry for the last, well, since 2003 when we started the ministry. And something that we've been saying all along in our ministry. Me as a priest. And no, please do not mistaken this for, hey, I want credit for what the Pope says. No, I'm not, forget that. All I'm telling you is that I felt very moved when I heard the Pope say these things, because it made me realize that as kook as I am, and as people have looked at me and said that, hey, don't mess with the status quo, and made me feel like, oh, we're doing something horrible. It's just beautiful to know somebody at this level is talking about these changes. Now, what I want to do is to share with you the link to the video, and please watch it. It's beautifully done. It's only 2 minutes long. Very nice, concise, and to the point. But what I'd like to do for the sake of our podcast, since we don't have a video component to this podcast, is to play it and read to you the subtitles, the closed caption translation. And then we'll come back and we'll discuss it. Okay, so here's the video. I'm going to read the subtitles. The specific vocation of the church is evangelization, which isn't proselytism. No, her vocation is evangelization, and even more, the church's identity is evangelization. We can only renew the church by discerning God's will in our daily life and embarking on a transformation guided by the Holy Spirit. Our own reform as persons is that transformation, allowing the Holy Spirit, the gift of God in our hearts, reminds us what Jesus taught and help us put it into practice. Let us begin reforming the church with a reform of ourselves, without prefabricated ideas, without ideological prejudices, without rigidity, but rather by moving forward based on spiritual experience, an experience of prayer, an experience of charity, an experience of service. I dream of an even more missionary option, one that goes out to meet others without proselytism, and that transforms all that structures for the evangelization of today's world. Let us remember that the church always has difficulties, always is in crisis, because she's alive. Living things go through crisis. Only the dead don't have crisis. Let us pray for the church that she may receive from the Holy Spirit the grace and strength to reform herself in the light of the gospel. Okay, there you have it. I mean, let's start off with a wow. Over the top, right? I mean, it's just so refreshing to hear the head of the church, the Roman Catholic Church in this case, to be talking about Christian terms, to be talking about the essence of Christianity without all of the hoopla, right? All right, let's break it down first of all. Let's define some of the terms that are here, just so we're all on the same page. Evangelism, okay? He starts off by saying the specific vocation of the church is evangelization, which isn't proselytism. No. He throws in that no, you know, no. Okay, let's define it. Well, what's evangelization? Evangelization is spreading the Christian gospel by public preaching or through personal witness. And there are many forms and manner in which this can take place. You witness, you proclaim the doctrine, you proclaim the words of Christ via the Bible. Evangelizing, and this is why sometimes some of the Protestant communities will refer to themselves as evangelical. In other words, they are there to proclaim the word of Jesus Christ. Now, there are many ways of evangelizing. Most famous among the traditionalists who talk about evangelization is the one that comes to us from Mother Teresa, right? And it might not have been hers originally, but she made it pretty famous. She says, always evangelize, always spread the gospel. And whenever necessary, use words. In other words, spread the gospel by doing works, not necessarily by standing on a street corner on a soapbox. But what does the Pope say here? He says the specific vocation, in other words, the work of the church, is evangelization. This is what we need to be doing, which isn't proselytism. So let's define what proselytism is. Proselytism is the act of becoming or the condition of being a proselyte. What is a proselyte? Is a new convert. Okay, let's see. Proselyte. Definition of a proselyte, a new convert. Okay, so in other words, can we evangelize without the final objective being that we want to make new Christians? In other words, the entire religion of Christianity takes second place to the message of Christianity. Does that sound familiar? Those of you who've been listening in the next step, does that sound familiar? When I say we get up and we proclaim the creed of the church, Havadam ki miasvads, we believe in one God, the Father Almighty. We believe in the Son of God. We believe in the Holy Spirit. We believe in one universal church. What's the one thing that is missing from our creed? We believe in the message of Jesus Christ. In other words, this is what the Pope is saying over here. Let's evangelize, but let not the object of, if along the way people want to convert to Christianity, beautiful. But that's not the object. Our object is not to proselytize, to get converts. It's let's get the message out there. He goes on to say we can renew the church by discerning God's will in our own life. And he talks very candidly that, yeah, you know, you want to reform the church, first reform yourself. Those of you who are familiar with the situation within the Armenian church, you know that there are two entities that govern different jurisdictions of the church. One is the Catholicos of all Armenians in Echmiadzin, the center of the Armenian church. And then there is another group that operates out of Beirut in an area called Antilias, which carries the historic see of Cilicia. And of course, Cilicia fell hundreds of years ago, and there is no longer a Cilicia dynasty or kingdom, but they have retained it, and for political reasons, they continue to keep it going. But basically, it's the same thing. Many times, people will come up to me, and they'll say, like, oh, look at you. Look at the Armenian church. You're split down the middle. And yes, they're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. We're identical churches. Everything is identical, but you have two different heads. And yes, is it wrong? Absolutely. It's non-canonical. But what can you do when somebody's out there and proclaiming that, you know, that they're a legitimate church? You can, I guess, go out and proclaim them wrong, and, you know, that's one way of dealing with it. Or you can go the route of the prodigal son, right? Where the father just allows the son to do what he needs to do, but is always willing to welcome him back home. And I like that. I like that formula because it seems like that's what's happening right now. Yeah, they've wandered away, okay, but the mother see of Holy Echmiadzin is always there. But many times when people come up to me, they'll say, like, oh, look, when are you going to take care of the split? And my answer is not necessarily about the history of the split or talking about the split, which I did with you briefly here, but it's to point to their own lives. That's fine. You're absolutely right. But how about you? Are you at peace with your brother? Are you fighting with your brother? Do you have an issue with your brother that you need to resolve? I mean, it's easy to look at the big institutions, the church, and say that, oh, you're split because it's beyond our control. But how about doing something in your control? Are you okay with your brother, with your sister? Are you okay with your neighbor? Are you dealing well with people in your own life? And that's what the Pope is talking about. Let us begin reforming the church with a reform of ourselves. And then he goes on to say, without prefabricated ideas, without ideological prejudices, without rigidity, prefabricated ideas, prejudices, that we have our beliefs, that this is what a Christian is, this is what we're going to be doing. These are the prefabricated prejudices that we have in our lives. And I hear it all the time. Whether it's about human sexuality, about the gays, the lesbians, or it's about other moral issues and everything, that these are the Christians, we're the Christians, you're the Christian. Forget about all that. Are you clean yourself? And then he goes on to say about the church, that the church is going through difficult times. But that's expected. It's going through difficulties because it's alive. The church is not dead. And if you haven't heard me say this once, you've heard me say it 1,000 times, that a dead entity does not evolve. The things that are in the grave at the cemetery do not grow. They're dead. Humans live. We live, and therefore if our institution, the church, is alive. You know, here in Pasadena, I helped build a church many years ago. We did the foundation and everything. And it was interesting because after I left that parish, there was a few people who wanted to put up the words up at the altar. And it's very interesting because all the altars are supposed to have the words of Jesus, usually the I am statement. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. In this case, they put up Takavor Yerk Navor Zegiretzit Ko Anshar Bahya. It's like, look, we're not going to change, you know, and it's like something that I would never, never allow in a church. And it's interesting because the other day I went to the other Armenian church in Pasadena, which there's two of, and one is in the shadow of the other one. Wow, yeah. Are we airing some of our dirty laundry right now? Absolutely. And guess what's on their altar? The same identical quote. No. They've put it up there, keep your church unshakable. That has a message about the unshakenness of the church, what Jesus Christ talks about. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. But having known these people, having been the pastor and knowing the intention with which they write, they're writing it like, we're maintaining the status quo. Nobody's touching this church. And unfortunately, that's how many people look at it. And the Pope goes on to say over here, only the dead don't have crises. So we come full circle today. If you think about it, we started off by looking at a planet that is in trouble. We looked at it, ecology. We looked at it by the Lorax, by talking to the children. And now the Pope is talking to his children, to his loved ones, and he's saying, let's fight against the indifferences, the injustices, and the poverty in the world by first ourselves being that transformed body, by bringing about a reformation, but that reformation beginning with ourselves, to reform ourselves. In other words, let's get realistic. Let's be the agents of change. So beautifully put. This just came out August 3rd. It's still brand new for me. I'm overwhelmed by it. I needed to share it with you. I wanted to share it with you in the context of this broader story that we talked about today, especially with what's going on in the world. It's an opportunity for us really to hone in on ourselves as being those agents of change. Every one of us is part of God's kingdom. Every one of us has a role to play in God's kingdom. Every one of us has received an invitation. The question is, how do we react to that invitation? That's today's lesson here on The Next Step. Here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Before getting back to The Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you, all of you, for all of your wonderful notes. And I think we really had a hit last week, right, with Ani Shahinyan's interview. I'm so glad that you enjoyed it, you liked it. And I did get a message from a dear deacon of ours, Deacon Stephen, who told me that the background singing and the hymns were kind of like catchy. It kind of like drew away from the interview. That was interesting, because likewise, you know, we did do the interview. I felt the same thing as I was listening to the interview later on. You know, what we do is we produce this on Thursday, and then Friday or Saturday I get a chance to listen to the entire thing from beginning to end. And I did the same thing. I was like listening to the hymns in the background and caught myself many times like singing along, which kind of, I don't want to say detracted, but it got me in another direction. So yeah, they did detract. Anyway, we'll have to watch that. But it was beautiful. It was part of the ambiance. We did that interview at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral, which is open every day. And so you can go in there and just enjoy the hymns being sung and just close your eyes in a state of meditation as those hymns are sung. Others on Ani Shahinyan, they appreciated the way she articulated the youth that she had in to see this kind of energy and this kind of love for the church and youth was also applauded. So definitely, I've spoken to her. We're hoping definitely we'll have another chance to meet with her and follow up on our conversation. Let's see. We got a lot of stuff going on this Sunday. If all goes well, I'm looking forward to being out in the Rancho Mirage area at St. Garabed Church for the service of Asvadzadzin. And of course, Great Blessing. Yes. Oh, you know, I've spoken about Great Blessing so many times. I'll put a link on today's show notes just to explain what that is for those of you who are the neophytes coming into all of this. Yes. The grapes. Okay. Nice way to bring an end to today's show with the grapes marching through. That old wrinkled fruit. That does it for today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed presenting it to you. Look for us on all the socials and, of course, at themothershipinissues.org. And do check out the show notes, because everything we talk about, there's extras that you can go to the videos and explore more about everything we talked about. On behalf of the wonderful team who put today's show together, starting with our one and only producer, Susie, and myself, Father Vazquez, I look forward to seeing you again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath cut out.
I want to test you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.
off, but I'm top minutes.